communications to a whisper or softly sung lullabies. Baby's breathing.
Every time I watch my newborn sleep, her breathing seems irregular. Her chest moves in a funny way, and frankly, it frightens me. Is something wrong with her breathing?
Not only is that kind of breathing during baby's sleep normal, but so are you for worrying about it. That's what new parents do. A newborn's normal breathing rate is about 40 breaths each minute during waking hours. But when your sweetie sleeps, it may slow down to as few as 20 breaths per minute. Her breathing pattern during sleep is also irregular, and that's normal, if stress-inducing to you. Your baby might breathe fast with repeated rapid and shallow breaths, lasting 15 to 20 seconds, and then pause. That is, stop breathing, and this is where it gets really scary. Usually for less than 10 seconds, though it might seem forever to you. And then, after that brief respiratory respite, breathe again, which is generally when you can start breathing again too. This type of breathing pattern, called periodic breathing, is standard during sleep for babies and is due to your baby's immature but developmentally appropriate breathing control center in the brain. You may also notice your baby's chest moving in and out while she's sleeping. Babies normally use their diaphragms, the large muscle below the lungs, for breathing. As long as your baby doesn't seem to be working hard to breathe, shows no blueness around the lips, and resumes normal shallow breathing without any intervention, there's nothing to worry about. Half of a newborn's sleep is spent in REM, rapid eye movement sleep. A time when she breathes irregularly, grunts and snorts, and twitches a lot. You can even see her eyes moving under the lids. The rest of her slumber is spent in quiet sleep, when she breathes very deeply and quietly and seems very still, except for occasional sucking motions or startling. As she gets older, she will experience less REM sleep, and the quiet sleep will become more like the non-REM sleep of adults. In other words, what you're describing is normal baby breathing. If, however, your baby takes more than 60 breaths per minute, flares her nose, makes grunting noises, looks blue, or sucks in the muscle between the ribs with each breath so that her ribs stick out, call the doctor immediately.
Everybody always jokes about parents standing over their baby's crib to hear if he's breathing. Well, now I find myself doing just that, even in the middle of the night.
A new parent standing over a baby's crib, checking for breathing, does seem like good stand-up material until you become a new parent yourself. And then it's no laughing matter. You wake in a cold sweat to complete silence after putting baby to bed 5 hours earlier. Could something be wrong? Why didn't he wake up? Or you pass his crib and he seems so silent and still that you have to poke him gingerly to be sure he's okay. Or he's breathing so hard you're sure he's having trouble breathing. You and all the other new parents. Not only are your concerns normal, but your baby's varied breathing patterns when he snoozes are too. It'll probably take a while, but eventually you'll become less panicky about whether he's going to wake up in the morning and more comfortable with both of you sleeping 8 hours at a stretch. Still, you may never totally be able to abandon the habit of checking on your child's breathing, at least once in a while, until he's off to college and sleeping in a dorm, out of sight, though not out of mind. Wondering if those breathing monitors, the ones that attach to baby's diaper or clothes or around baby's foot, or that slip under the mattress and then track baby's movement, heart rate, and breathing, depending on the model, will bring the peace of mind you're looking for? They might, and many parents are able to sleep more soundly thanks to the security of knowing their sweet sleeper's breathing is being monitored. But before you shell out the big bucks for these devices, keep in mind that the number of false alarms they give may actually cause more anxiety than they are supposed to prevent. And many parents, fed up with the repeated false alarms, end up switching the devices off altogether. What's more, there's no evidence that these monitors prevent SIDS, and public health and safety agencies recommend against using them. Moving a sleeping baby to a crib.
Every time I try to put my sleeping baby down in her crib, she wakes up.
She's finally asleep after what seems like hours of nursing on sore breasts, rocking in aching arms, lullabying in an increasingly hoarse voice. You edge cautiously to the crib, holding your breath and moving only the muscles that are absolutely necessary. Then, with a silent but fervent prayer, you lift her over the edge of the crib and begin the perilous descent to the mattress below. Finally, you release her, but a split second too soon. She's down, then she's up, turning her head from side to side, sniffing and whimpering softly, then sobbing loudly. Ready to cry yourself, you pick her up and start all over. If you're having trouble keeping a good baby down, wait 10 minutes until she's in a deep sleep in your arms. Then try a high mattress. You'll find it much easier to place your baby in her crib if you set the mattress at the highest possible level, at least 4 inches from the top of the rail. Just be sure to lower it by the time your baby is old enough to sit up. Or start using a bassinet or cradle or play yard with a bassinet insert, which may be easier to lift a baby into and out of. Close quarters. The longer the distance between the place your baby falls asleep and the place where you're going to put her down, the more opportunity for her to awaken on the way. So feed or rock her as close to the cradle or crib as possible. A seat you can get out of. Always feed or rock your baby in a chair or sofa that you can rise from smoothly without disturbing her. The right side or the left. Feed or rock baby in whichever arm will allow you to put her in the crib most easily. If she falls asleep prematurely on the wrong arm, gently switch sides and rock or feed some more before attempting to put her down. Constant contact. When baby is comfortable and secure in your arms, suddenly being dropped into the open space of a mattress can be startling and result in a rude awakening. So cradle baby all the way down, back first, easing your bottom hand out from under just before you reach the mattress. Maintain a hands-on pose for a few moments longer, gently patting if she starts to stir. A lulling tune. Hypnotize your baby to sleep with a traditional lullaby. She won't object if you're off-key or don't actually know all the words. Or an improvised one with a monotonous beat. Ah, baby. Ah, baby. Or with a few rounds of shh. Continue as you carry her to her crib, while you're putting her down, and for a few moments afterward. If she begins to toss, sing some more until she's fully quieted. A rock till she drops off to dreamland. One of the benefits of a rockable cradle or bassinet, you can continue that soothing rocking once she's down for the count. Another option, a vibrating mattress pad designed to be slipped under the crib mattress that runs for a half hour or so, long enough, hopefully, for your sweet little one to fall deeply to sleep.
Babies are supposed to cry. Some cry more than others, but all newborns cry, and they're supposed to. After all, that's how babies make sure they get their needs met. Think of it as survival of the loudest. So a baby who's not doing much crying at all, who seems content most of the time, whether or not those needs are being met, may be telling you something else entirely, that he or she is not strong or healthy enough to cry. If your baby is doing very little crying after the first couple of days of life, especially if he or she isn't demanding the most basic of needs, regular feeds, check in with your doctor without delay. You may just have a very laid-back little one on your hands, and in that case, you'll have to stay on top of those needs, even if he or she doesn't demand them. Or your baby may not be thriving, in which case, getting the right medical attention is vital. Putting crying on hold. It's a credo for newborn crying. When your baby cries, you come running. But what if baby cries when you're in the middle of rinsing shampoo out of your hair, or draining boiling water from a pot of pasta, or unclogging the toilet that's about to overflow, or finishing a text to your boss, or finishing, a little business in the bedroom? Do you need to drop everything to pick up your crying baby? Of course not. Letting a baby cry for a minute or two or even five every now and then isn't harmful, as long as he or she can't get into trouble while waiting for you, and especially if your usual response time is prompt. Even taking a 10 to 15 minute break during a particularly trying crying marathon won't hurt, and it might help both of you get through this challenging phase of babyhood. In fact, some experts suggest building those breaks in if you're dealing with a particularly tough case of colic, setting up a routine in which you let baby cry for those short intervals in a safe place like the crib, picking him or her up and trying to comfort for another 15 minutes, then putting him or her down and repeating. Clearly, don't try this if it seems to make the colic worse or if it's something you just don't feel comfortable doing.
Crying.
I know babies are supposed to cry, but ever since we came home from the hospital with our baby, she's been crying a lot.
Most parents do a fair amount of high-fiving at the hospital. Pretty certain they scored the only baby on the block who hardly cries. But that's because few babies do a whole lot of crying in their first hours of life, when they're still catching up on their rest and recovering after delivery. Fast forward a couple of days, usually right about the time that parents bring their bundle of joy home, and baby usually changes her tune. And that's not surprising. Crying is, after all, the only way infants have of communicating their needs and feelings, their very first baby talk. Your baby can't tell you that she's lonely, hungry, wet, tired, uncomfortable, too warm, too cold, or frustrated any other way. And though it may seem impossible now, you will soon be able, at least part of the time, to decode your baby's different cries and know what she's crying for. Some newborn crying, however, seems entirely unrelated to basic needs. In fact, 80 to 90% of all babies have daily crying sessions of 15 minutes to an hour that are not easily explained or decoded. These periodic crying spells, like those associated with colic, a more severe and persistent form of unexplained crying, most often occur in the evening. It may be that this is the most hectic and stressful time of day in the home. Everybody's tired, everybody's hungry, and mom's milk supply may be at its lowest level of the day. Everybody's done, and that goes for baby too. Or it may be that after a busy day of taking in and processing all the sights, sounds, smells, and other stimuli in her environment, a baby just needs to unwind with a good cry. Crying for a few minutes may even help her nod off to sleep. Hang in there. As your baby becomes a more effective communicator, and as you become more proficient at understanding her, she will cry less often, for shorter periods, and will be more easily comforted when she does cry. Meanwhile, even if your baby's crying doesn't seem to reach colicky proportions, and fingers crossed it won't, the same strategies that help with colic may help restore calm.
You can't spoil a newborn. Worried about spoiling your newborn by always responding so quickly to those cries? Don't be. It isn't possible to spoil a baby in the first 6 months. Responding promptly to crying won't make your baby more demanding. In fact, quite the opposite is true. The faster your newborn's needs are met, the more likely he or she is to grow up a more secure, less demanding child.
Colic.
I'm almost afraid to consider that our baby has colic. But with all this crying, I can't imagine what else it might be. How do I know for sure he's colicky?
Call it colic, call it extreme crying, call it miserable, and call it common too, because if misery loves company, parents of colicky babies have quite a pity party going on. It's estimated that 1 in 5 babies have crying spells, usually beginning in late afternoon and sometimes lasting until bedtime, that are severe enough to be labeled colic. Colic differs from ordinary crying in that baby seems inconsolable. Crying turns to screaming, and the ordeal lasts for 3 hours, sometimes much longer, occasionally nearly around the clock. Most often, colicky periods recur daily, though some babies take an occasional night off. Doctors usually diagnose colic based on the rule of 3, at least 3 hours of crying, at least 3 days a week, lasting for at least 3 weeks. But of course, some babies are colic overachievers, crying far more hours and days and weeks. The baby with a textbook case of colic pulls his knees up, clenches his fists, and generally moves his legs and arms more. He closes his eyes tightly or opens them wide, furrows his brow, even holds his breath briefly. Bowel activity increases and he passes gas. Eating and sleeping are disrupted by the crying. Baby frantically seeks a nipple, only to reject it once sucking has begun, or dozes for a few moments, only to wake up screaming. But few infants follow the textbook description exactly. Different babies do colic differently, and sometimes the same babies do colic differently on different days. Colic generally begins during the 2nd or 3rd week of life, later in preterm infants, and usually gets as bad as it's going to get by 6 weeks. Though colic may feel as though it will never end, it will typically start to taper off at 10 to 12 weeks, light at the end of the tunnel. By 3 months, later in preterm babies, most colicky infants seem to be miraculously cured, with just a few continuing their problem crying through the 4th or 5th month, or shudder, beyond. The colic may stop suddenly or end gradually, with some good and some bad days until they're all good. Though these daily screaming sessions, whether they're marathons or shorter sprints, are usually called colic, the word is really just a catch-all term for problem crying. The problem being, there's no solution to it besides the passing of time. There isn't a clear definition of exactly what colic is or how and if it differs from other types of extreme crying. But when it comes down to it, do definitions and differences really matter when your baby's been crying hours on end and you're powerless to calm him down? Realistically, probably not so much. What might help, at least a little, is to know that colic isn't your fault or anyone's fault. While the exact causes of colic remain a mystery, what experts do know is that it isn't the result of genetics, anything that happened during pregnancy or childbirth, or parenting skills, or lack of them, in case you're wondering. Here are some theories of what's behind all that crying. Overload. Newborns have a built-in mechanism for tuning out the sights and sounds around them, which allows them to eat and sleep without being disturbed by their environment. Near the end of the first month, that mechanism disappears, leaving babies and their brand new senses more vulnerable to the stimuli in their surroundings. With so many sensations coming at them, some infants become overwhelmed. Often, not surprisingly, at the end of the day. To release that stress, they cry and cry and cry. Colic ends when the baby learns how to selectively filter out some environmental stimuli, and in doing so, avoid a sensory overload. If you think this might be the cause of your baby's colic, The try everything approach, rocking, bouncing, driving, swinging, singing, may actually make things worse. Instead, watch how your baby responds to certain stimuli and steer clear of the offending ones. If baby cries harder when you rub or massage him, limit that kind of touching during colic. Instead, try wearing your baby or use a swing once he's old enough. Immature digestion. Digesting food is a pretty demanding job for a baby's brand new gastrointestinal system. As a result, food may pass through too quickly and not break down completely, resulting in pain when gas is passed. When gas seems to be pulling the colic trigger, there are medications that may help. When it's the type of formula that might be the culprit, a change in consultation with the pediatrician to one that is more easily tolerated or digested may be in order. Much less likely, it could be something in a breastfeeding mom's diet that's triggering the colic. To find out if that's the case, you can try eliminating common offenders in your diet. Caffeine, dairy, cabbage, broccoli, to see if that makes a difference over a couple of weeks. GERD. There is some evidence that GERD may sometimes trigger the excessive crying of colic. That's because GERD irritates the esophagus, much like acid reflux in an adult, causing discomfort and crying. Exposure to smoking. Several studies show that moms who smoke during or after pregnancy are more likely to have babies with colic. Secondhand smoke may also be a culprit. Though the link exists, it is unclear how cigarette smoke might cause colic. The bottom line, for loads of more significant health reasons, don't smoke or let anyone else smoke around baby. What's reassuring about colic, besides that it doesn't last forever, is that babies who have these crying spells don't seem to be any the worse for wear. Though the same can't always be said for their parents. Colicky babies thrive, usually gaining as well as or better than babies who cry very little, and are no more likely to have behavioral problems than other children later on. They're often more alert as babies, which is probably part of their problem since they take in more of the kind of stimuli that ends up overwhelming them, and better problem solvers as toddlers. For parents, surviving colic. There's no question that parents get the worst of colic, though it can safely be said that even hours and hours of daily crying doesn't seem to hurt a baby. It certainly does leave its mark on mom and dad. Listening to a baby's screams can be irritating and anxiety-provoking. Yes, even when you love that baby with all your heart. Objective studies show that it's linked to a rise in blood pressure, a speeding up of the heartbeat, and changes in blood flow to the skin. In other words, it can take a physical and emotional toll. To cope with colicky crying that just won't quit, try the following. Break it up. If you're the one who's been left holding the crying baby 7 nights a week at colic time, the strain is bound to wear on you, your health, and your relationships with your baby and with others. If there are two parents home during baby witching hours, make sure colic duty is divided up equally between the two of you. An hour on, an hour off, a night on, a night off, or whatever arrangement you find works best. A fresh set of arms and a different rocking rhythm and a different singing voice sometimes induces calm in a crying baby, which may make switching off frequently your best bet. Then try to make sure you take an occasional break together. If you can find a babysitter or a family member who's patient and experienced with crying babies, go out for dinner. Even if you're breastfeeding, you should be able to squeeze in a meal, hit the gym, or just take a long, quiet walk. If you're the only parent in the house, either all or some of the time, you'll need to call on help even more often. Coping with a crying infant for hours a day, every day, is a lot for any one person to handle. No help in sight. Keep listening. Take a break. Sure, it's important to respond to crying, which is an infant's only way of communicating. But every once in a while, it doesn't hurt to give yourself a break from your baby and your baby a break from you. Take 10 or 15 minutes with baby in a safe place to do something relatively relaxing. Do a few yoga poses, watch a little TV, listen to some music. Hopefully, you'll be a little less ragged and a little more refreshed when you pick up baby again for round 2, or 3, or 4, and that will do you both some good. Tune out. To lessen the effect of baby's wails, use earplugs or noise-canceling headphones. They won't block out the sound entirely, just dull it so it won't be so wearing. Or tune into some iTunes. The music will not only soothe you, and if you're lucky, baby, it'll also give you a rhythm to move to. Get physical. Exercise is a great way to work off tension, something a crying baby will give you plenty of. Work out at home with baby early in the day. Head to the gym that has childcare services, or take the baby for a brisk walk outdoors when fussy hour hits. It may help calm you both. And always keep a stress ball nearby for times when you need to knead. Talk about it. Do a little crying yourself. On any willing shoulder, your spouse's, the pediatrician's, a family member's, a friend's, or vent on social media. Talking about the colic won't cure it, but you may feel a little better after sharing, especially if you share with others in the same rocky boat, or who've been in the same boat and weathered the storm. Just knowing that you're not alone in the world of inconsolable babies can make a world of difference. If you really feel violent, get help. Almost everyone finds a constantly crying baby hard to take, sometimes even hard to love, and that's completely normal. You're only human, just like your baby. But for some, endless crying becomes more than they can cope with. The result is sometimes child abuse. You may be even more likely to cross that line if you're suffering from untreated and possibly undiagnosed postpartum depression. If your thoughts of hurting your baby are more than fleeting, if you feel like you're about to give in to the urge to hit or shake your baby or harm him or her in any way, get help immediately. Put your baby in a safe place and get on the phone right away with your spouse, a friend or relative, the doctor, or someone else who can help you. Or bring your baby over to a neighbor's house and ask for help. Even if your powerful feelings don't lead to child abuse, they can start eroding your relationship with your baby and your confidence in yourself as a parent. Unless you get counseling, and if you're suffering from postpartum depression or psychosis, appropriate treatment quickly. Don't wait it out. Get the help you need now. Prescription for colic. Looking for a colic cure you can count on while you're counting the days until your little crier has crossed the 3-month threshold, hopefully leaving colic behind? Unfortunately, there are no prescriptions or potions, traditional, homeopathic, or complementary and alternative that are guaranteed to stop the crying. There are, however, a few that doctors sometimes suggest, if only to offer parents desperate for anything. In most cases, there's little evidence they work, and if parents see an improvement, it's most likely because babies with colic improve after a few months anyway. Here are some treatments that have plenty of anecdotal evidence, but not much in the way of science to back them up. Anti-gas drops. Colicky babies are often extra gassy. Whether they're gassy because they're crying or they're crying because they're gassy or both isn't clear. And studies show that reducing the gas may reduce the discomfort and the crying. So simethicone drops, the same anti-gas ingredient found in many adult preparations, formulated for babies under such brand names as Mylocon and Fazyme, are often recommended for relief. Two trials comparing crying duration, however, found no difference between babies treated with simethicone drops and those not treated. Ask the doctor whether these drops might help relieve your baby's symptoms. Also ask whether it's worth trying the Windy, a plastic device that helps pass gas rectally. Probiotics. Something else to ask the doctor about, probiotic drops, which may reduce crying in some colicky babies, probably because they can ease tummy troubles. Again, research has yet to consistently back this up. Gripe water. In the category of little evidence, lots of anecdotes, gripe water, a combination of herbs and sodium bicarbonate in drops, is touted for its baby-soothing benefits. Anecdotally, many parents swear by gripe water, but no reliable studies have shown its effectiveness in reducing colic symptoms. Check with your baby's doctor for a recommendation. Chiropractic. The theory behind this treatment is that when a baby's spine is misaligned, it can lead to digestive issues and discomfort. Gentle manipulation of the spine is supposed to remedy this, though the clinical evidence hasn't backed that up. Plus, some doctors say chiropractic on infants isn't safe. So definitely get the pediatrician's advice and a referral to a qualified practitioner before booking this kind of treatment. Herbs. Herbal remedies such as fennel extract or herbal tea, chamomile, licorice, fennel, balm mint, and so on, given by dropper, may be somewhat effective in relieving symptoms of colicky babies, but not significantly, according to studies. Check with the doc before using any herbal remedy. Just remember, as desperate as you might be for a problem crying panacea, don't give your baby any medication, herbal or otherwise, without talking to your baby's doctor first. And really, the best prescription for colic isn't treating the baby, but rather treating the parents. Finding ways to relieve your stress from all that crying, and reminding yourself that colic isn't harmful to your baby, and that it will pass. Promise. Coping with crying.
My baby just won't stop crying, and I need help helping her and me.
There's nothing more frustrating than trying to console an inconsolable baby, especially when you've been trying, and baby's still crying. But the truth is, not all soothing strategies work on every baby, and few work on every baby every time. But chances are you'll find at least a couple in the following list of tricks that will work on your baby some of the time. Just give each a fair shot before you switch to another, and don't pull out too many tricks at one time or you'll overload baby circuits and step up the crying you're trying to stop. Respond. Of course you know that responding to your baby's cries is important, but put yourself in her little booties for a moment and you'll see just how important. Crying is a baby's only way of communicating her needs, but it's also her only way of wielding any control at all over a vast and bewildering new environment. She cries, you come running to her side. Powerful stuff when you're otherwise completely powerless. Though it may sometimes seem the definition of pointless in the short term. You come, she still cries. Responding promptly to your baby's cries will, studies show, reduce her crying in the long run. In fact, babies whose parents responded to them regularly and promptly in infancy cry less as toddlers. What's more, crying that's been left to intensify for more than a few minutes becomes harder to interpret. The baby becomes so upset, even she doesn't remember what started all the fuss in the first place. And often, the longer baby cries, the longer it takes to stop the crying. Assess the situation. Even a colicky baby who does a lot of unexplained crying, can cry for a reason too. So always check to see if there's a simple and fixable cause for crying. The usual suspects: your baby's hungry, tired, bored, wet or poopy, too warm or too cold, or needs food, a nap, some rocking, some attention, a change of position, to be swaddled. Do a diet check. Be sure your baby isn't always crying because she's always hungry. Lack of adequate weight gain or signs of failure to thrive can clue you in. Increasing baby's intake, pumping up your milk supply if you're breastfeeding, may eliminate excessive crying. If baby is bottle-fed, ask the doctor whether the crying might be due to an allergy to her formula, though this isn't very likely unless crying is accompanied by other signs of allergy. If you're breastfeeding, consider doing a check of your own diet, since there's a very slight possibility that the crying might be triggered by baby's sensitivity to something you're eating. Test more common culprits, like dairy, caffeine, or gas-producing vegetables, like cabbage, by removing them one at a time from your diet and seeing if there's an improvement in baby's symptoms. You can add them back in one at a time to narrow down the culprit or culprits, if any. Get close. In societies where babies are always worn or toted in carriers, there isn't as much crying or fussiness. This traditional wisdom seems to translate well in our world, too. Research has shown that babies who are worn or carried for at least 3 hours every day cry less than babies who aren't toted as often. Not only does wearing or carrying your baby give her the pleasure of physical closeness to you, and after 9 months of constant closeness, that may be just what baby's crying for, but it may help you tune in better to baby's needs. Swaddle. Being tightly wrapped is very comforting to many newborns, especially during those fussy periods, since it offers the same warm, snug security they grew accustomed to in the womb. A few, however, intensely dislike swaddling. The only way you'll know which holds true for your baby is to give swaddling a try the next time colic begins. Take a clue from kangaroos. Like swaddling, kangaroo care, cuddling your baby close to you, cocooned under your shirt or zipped into a sweatshirt, skin to skin, heart to heart, gives many babies a sense of comforting security. Just keep in mind that, as with swaddling, some babies prefer more freedom of movement and will resist being held tightly. Rhythmic rocking. Most babies find comfort and calm from being rocked, whether in your arms, a stroller, a vibrating or swaying infant seat, a baby swing when baby's old enough, or being worn while you walk or sway. Some babies respond better to fast rocking than to slow, but don't rock or shake your baby forcefully, since this can cause serious whiplash injury. For some babies, rocking side to side tends to stimulate, rocking back and forth to calm. Test your baby's response to different kinds of rocking. A warm water bath. A bath can soothe some babies, though bath haters may just scream louder when they hit the water. Soothing sounds. Even if your singing voice has a fingernails on the blackboard effect on others, your baby will probably love it and be lulled by it. Learn whether your baby is soothed by soft lullabies, sprightly rhymes, or rock ballads, or pop tunes, and whether a hushed, high-pitched, or deep voice is the ticket to calm. But don't stop at singing. Many babies are calmed by other sounds as well. The hum of a fan, vacuum cleaner. You can wear your baby while you vacuum, combining motion with sound and getting your floors clean at the same time. Or clothes dryer. Try leaning your back against the dryer while you're wearing your baby to get a nice vibration with the machine's purr. Also soothing, a repeated shh, shh, or ah, ah. A white noise machine, or an app that plays nature sounds, like the wind blowing through trees or waves breaking on the beach. Massage. For babies who like to be stroked, and many do, massage can be very calming, especially if you give it while you're lying on your back, baby on your chest. Experiment with light and firmer strokes to make sure you're rubbing baby the right way. Your baby's not buying the massage? Don't push the rub. Some little ones are touch-averse when they're fussy. Add a little pressure, on baby's tummy, that is. The colicary, or any position that applies gentle pressure to baby's abdomen, such as across your lap with belly on one knee and head on the other, can relieve discomfort that might be contributing to the crying. Some babies prefer being upright on the shoulder, but again with pressure on their bellies while their backs are being padded or rubbed. Or try this gas reliever. Gently push baby's knees up to his or her tummy and hold for 10 seconds. Then release and gently straighten them. Repeat several times. Alternatively, you can bicycle baby's legs gently to release any gas pain. Satisfy with sucking. Sucking doesn't always have to come with a meal. And in fact, newborns sometimes need to suck just for sucking's sake. Using the breast or bottle to satisfy your baby's need for extra sucking can lead to a cycle of too much feeding, too much gas, and too much crying. When your baby's fussy but not hungry, try a pacifier. That's why they call them soothies. Or your pinky. Or help your little one find her fist to suck on. Comfort with consistency. Even babies who are too young for a schedule can be calmed by consistency. Singing the same song, swaddling the same way, rocking at the same speed in the same direction, playing the same white noise sounds. Consistency is likely to pay off with soothing techniques too. Once you find what works, stick with it most of the time, and try not to switch around too much from one strategy to the other during the same crying jag. Get out of the house. Sometimes just a change to an outdoor location will magically change a baby's mood. Add motion and you've got a really powerful soothing potion. So take your baby for a walk in the stroller or in a sling or carrier, or strap her into the car seat for a drive, but turn around and head home if the crying continues in the car. Otherwise, it could distract you from the road. Control air. A lot of newborn discomfort is caused by swallowing air during feeds. Discomfort leads to crying, and crying leads to more swallowed air, a cycle that you definitely want to break when you can. Babies will swallow less air during feeds if they're properly latched on during breastfeeding or slightly upright during bottle feeding. The right-sized nipple hole on a bottle will also reduce air intake. Be sure it isn't too large, which promotes gulping of air with formula, or too small. Struggling for formula also promotes air swallowing. Hold the bottle so that no air enters the nipple, or choose one that controls for air. And be sure to burp baby frequently during feedings to expel swallowed air. Sometimes a change of nipple or bottle can significantly reduce crying. Start fresh. As new as your newborn is to the world, she's wise beyond her days when it comes to picking up your feelings. If you're struggling for hours to soothe your baby, you're bound to be stressed out, and she's bound to sense it and be stressed out by it. The result? More crying, of course. If you can, periodically hand baby off to another pair of loving arms, so you can both get a stress break and a fresh start. Have no one to relieve you? Try putting your baby down in a safe place for a few minutes. Excise excitement. Having a new baby to show off can be fun. Everyone wants to see the baby, and you want to take her everywhere to be seen. You also want to expose baby to new experiences in stimulating environments. That's fine for some babies, too stimulating for others, particularly young ones. If your baby is colicky, limit excitement, visitors, and stimulation, especially in the late afternoon and early evening. check with the doctor. Well, the odds are that your baby's daily screaming sessions are due to normal crying or colic, it's a good idea to talk the situation over with the doctor, if only to get some reassurance and maybe a few extra soothing strategies. Describing the crying, its duration, intensity, pattern, any variation from the norm, and any accompanying symptoms will also help the doctor rule out any underlying medical condition, like GERD or milk allergy, that could be triggering the crying. Wait it out. Sometimes nothing relieves colic but the passing of time. And while that time may seem to stretch on forever, especially if your baby's colic is a daily struggle, it may help to remind yourself over and over and over again, this too shall pass, usually by the time baby's 3 months old.
For parents, helping siblings live with colic. So, let's recap the last few weeks as it appears to your older but still very young child. First, mommy disappears for a couple of days and then returns, super tired and achy, with her arms full of a strange little bundle that's too small to play with, but apparently not too small to take up everyone's lap and attention, or to be gifted with a steady stream of toys. The baby cries a lot, and just when it seems like there's no way anything could possibly cry any more or any louder, this red-faced creature starts to cry even more and even louder, screaming, shrieking, howling for hours on end, not to mention during the hours of the day that were always Big Sib's favorite, dinner with mommy and daddy, bath and story time, cuddles, all of which seem to have gone out the window suddenly, and Big Sib probably by now not so secretly wishes that baby would follow out the window. Instead of being a time for eating, sharing, and quiet play, early evening turns into a time of disrupted meals, frantic pacing and rocking, and distracted, irritable parents. You can't make colic easy on your older child any more than you can make it easy on yourself. In fact, it's bound to be a little harder since your firstborn can't grasp that colic is a phase, but you can help ease the toll little sib colic can take if you show and tell. Explain on your older child's level what colic is, that it's baby's way of getting used to being in a new and strange world, which can be a little scary at first. Reassure him or her that most of the crying will stop once the baby learns more about the world and figures out other ways of saying, I'm hungry, I'm tired, my tummy hurts, I need a cuddle, I'm scared. Show the brand new Big Sib a photo of himself or herself crying as a newborn, and then as a smiling older baby and toddler. This might help illustrate that there's hope for this newborn. Play the no blame game. Little children tend to blame themselves for everything that goes wrong in a home, from mommy and daddy's arguing to a new baby's crying. Explain that all this crying is nobody's fault, that all babies cry when they're new. Load up on love. Dealing with a colicky baby can be so distracting, especially in the context of an already busy day, that you may forget to do those special little things that show a toddler or older child you care. Even during the worst of the storm, make sure you break from the pacing and rocking occasionally to give your older son or daughter a reassuring hug. If baby is soothed by walks outdoors, put the little crier in a carrier and take a stroll with your older child. Or head to the playground. You can push the swing wearing a sling. The new baby will be lulled, and your older child will feel loved. Divide the baby, conquer the sibling rivalry. When both parents are home, try taking turns walking the floor with the baby during colic marathons so that your older child is usually getting the attention of at least one parent. Another option, one parent can take baby out for a ride in the stroller or the car, the motion often helps subdue the colic, while the other parent spends some quality, quiet time at home with your older son or daughter. Or one of you can take your big kid out to dinner, for pizza with a side of peace and quiet, or if it's still light out, for an early evening excursion to the playground, while the other toughs it out at home with the screamer. Put baby on mute. Okay, you can't mute your little crier, but you can help muffle baby's wails so big bro or sis can catch a break from the constant background crying. Gift your older child with soundproofing earmuffs and set him or her up with a book to look at, crayons to scribble with, play clay to pound on, or let your big kid listen to an audiobook with low-volume headphones that dampen the sound of baby's cries. Or let your older child listen to music with headphones in another room. Again, keep the volume low so as not to damage your big kid's ears, to help drown out baby's howling. Preserve the rituals. Routines are comforting to young children, and when they're disrupted, it can be enormously unsettling, especially during times when life is more unsettled than usual, as when there's a new crying baby in the house. Do your best to make sure your older son or daughter's treasured rituals don't fall victim to your baby's colic. If bedtime has always meant a leisurely bath, complete with bubbles and splashing, a cuddle fest and two stories, strive for a leisurely bath, cuddle fest, and two stories every night, even when colic's in full swing. Dividing the colic duty will hopefully make those routines possible more often than not. Go one-on-one. Even if it's only half an hour a day, maybe during your newborn's best nap of the day, probably before daily colic kicks in, try to schedule some special one-on-one time to spend with your older child without screeching baby sibling tagging along. Play teddy bear picnic, bake muffins, paint a mural on an extra-large piece of paper, put together a puzzle, start an egg carton garden. Have other stuff to do while you have a chance? Chances are, there's nothing more important.
Pacifier. My baby has crying jags in the afternoon. Should I give him a pacifier to comfort him?
It's easy, it's quick, and for many babies, it turns on the comfort and turns off the tears more reliably than a dozen hoarse choruses of Rockabye Baby. There's no denying a pacifier can work remarkably well at comforting your baby and calming his crying, especially if he has a strong need to suck but hasn't yet figured out how to get his fingers in his mouth. But should you pop that binky into your baby's mouth at the first whimper? Here's a look at some pacifier pros and cons. First, the pros. A pacifier could save your baby's life. Talk about a powerful positive. Research has linked pacifier use to a decreased risk of SIDS. Experts believe that babies who suck on pacifiers may not sleep as deeply and wake more easily than babies who don't, making them less susceptible to SIDS. Another theory is that sucking on a pacifier might help open up airspace around a baby's mouth and nose, which ensures he gets enough oxygen. Because of the reduced SIDS risk, the AAP suggests that pacifiers be used for babies under age one at nap time and bedtime, assuming your baby will take one. Not all babies will. The pacifier is in the parent's control. That can be a good thing when nothing but plunking that pacifier in your baby's mouth will generate calm. Plus, unlike the thumb, which is in your baby's control, when you decide it's time for your baby to give up the binky, you're the one who will be able to pull the plug. Whether your little one will put up a fight is another issue. Now the cons. If a baby gets attached to a binky, the habit can be a hard one to break, especially once your baby turns into a more inflexible toddler, when the continuing use of pacifiers is linked to recurrent ear infections and later to misaligned teeth. A passy can become a crutch for the parents. Plunking that pacifier in your baby's mouth can become just a little too easy and a lot more convenient than trying to figure out the reason for the fussing or if there might be other ways of placating him. The result may be a baby who can be happy only with something in his mouth and who is unable to comfort himself any other way. Being passy dependent can mean less sleep for everyone, because babies who learn to go to sleep with a pacifier might not learn how to fall asleep on their own, and they might put up a sniffly fuss when the binky gets lost in the middle of the night, requiring weary mom or dad to get up and pop it back in each time baby wakes up. Of course, though inconvenient, this is a pretty minor con compared with the significant pro of safer sleep for pacifier-using newborns. What about nipple confusion or pacifiers interfering with breastfeeding? Contrary to popular belief, there is little evidence that pacifiers cause nipple confusion. And as far as throwing a monkey wrench into long-term nursing for your little monkey, the data doesn't bear that out either. In fact, some research shows that limiting the pacifier for newborns actually decreases the rate of exclusive breastfeeding. Still, there's no doubt that your milk supply is dependent on your baby suckling, which means that spending too much time with a mouthful of Binky can mean too little time spent with a mouthful of breast, which can mean too little stimulation for your milk supply. The bottom line on Binkies, make moderation your motto. Consider bringing on a passy at sleep times, as recommended, and at fussy times, when your baby really seems to need relief, and so do you. Give one a try also if your little one has such a strong need for sucking that your nipples have become human pacifiers, or if baby is taking too much formula because he's not happy without a nipple in his mouth. Just don't overuse it, especially if Binky time is cutting down on feeding time or socializing time. Remember, it's hard to coo or smile when you're sucking. And try not to use it as a substitute for parent-provided attention or comfort. Most important, be sure to use the pacifier safely. Never attach one to the crib, play yard, or stroller, or hang it around your baby's neck or wrist with a ribbon, string, or cord of any kind. Babies can be strangled this way. Be sure to size up the pacifier as baby grows, and ditch the soft hospital passy so it doesn't become a choking hazard. And have in mind a plan to ditch the pacifier down the road once your baby is approaching his first birthday, at which point the pros will start to be outweighed by the cons, and your little one will be better off trying to figure out how to self-soothe in other ways. Healing of the umbilical cord.
The cord still hasn't fallen off my baby's belly button, and it looks really awful. Could it be infected?
Healing belly buttons almost always look worse than they actually are, even when they're healing normally. Not surprising when you consider what an umbilical stump is, the remnants of the gelatinous, blood vessel-filled cord that spent months nurturing and nourishing your baby, but is now yucky, gross, and without a doubt overstaying its welcome, not to mention preventing the much-anticipated appearance of your baby's adorable belly button. It pretty much goes without saying that there's nothing adorable about an umbilical stump. The cord stump, which is shiny and moist at birth, usually turns from yellowish green to black, starts to shrivel and dry up, and finally falls off within a week or two. But the big event can occur earlier or even much later. Some babies don't seem to want to give theirs up. Until it does drop off, keep the site dry, no tub baths, and exposed to air. Turn diapers down so they don't rub. When it does fall off, you might notice a small raw spot or a small amount of blood-tinged fluid oozing out. This is normal, and unless it doesn't dry up completely in a few days, there is no need for concern. Unsightly, though, that cord stump might be, it's unlikely that it's infected, especially if you've been taking care to keep it dry. But be sure to keep a close eye on your baby's healing stump if he was born premature or at a low birth weight, or if the stump falls off early, since research suggests these may increase the risk of a belly button infection. If you do notice pus or a fluid-filled lump on or near your baby's umbilical cord stump, and a reddish hue around the stump, check with your baby's doctor to rule out infection, which is rare. Symptoms of an infection may also include abdominal swelling, a foul-smelling discharge from the infected region, fever, bleeding around the umbilical cord stump, irritability, lethargy,
and decreased activity. If there is an infection, antibiotics can be prescribed to clear it up. Umbilical hernia.
Every time she cries, my baby's navel seems to stick out. What does that mean?
It probably means that your baby has an umbilical hernia, which, before you start worrying, is absolutely nothing to worry about. Prenatally, all babies have an opening in the abdominal wall through which blood vessels extend into the umbilical cord. In some cases, for black babies more often than white, the opening doesn't close completely at birth. When these babies cry, cough, or strain, a small coil of intestine bulges through the opening, raising the navel and often the area around it in a lump that ranges from fingertip to lemon size. While the lump might look a little scary and sound even scarier when you hear it's a hernia, it's likely to resolve on its own eventually, without any intervention. Small openings usually close or become inconspicuous within a few months, large ones by age 2. In the meantime, the best treatment for an umbilical hernia is usually no treatment at all. So definitely don't listen to old schoolers and others who tell you to tape or bind the hernia down. Circumcision care.
My son was circumcised yesterday, and there seems to be oozing around the area today. Is this normal?
Not only is a little oozing normal, it's a sign that the body's healing fluids are heading to the site to begin their important work. Soreness and sometimes a small amount of bleeding are also common after a circumcision, and nothing to be concerned about. Call the doctor if the head of the penis turns dark blue or black, if it's severely swollen, or if your baby can't seem to pee. Also call if the plastic ring, if one was used, hasn't fallen off after 2 weeks. Using double diapers for the first day after the procedure will help to cushion your baby's penis and also to keep his thighs from pressing against it. Usually the penis will be wrapped in gauze. Check with the doctor about continuing care. Some recommend putting a fresh gauze pad dabbed with Vaseline, Aquaphor, or another ointment on the penis with each diaper change, while others don't think it's necessary as long as you keep the area clean. You'll also want to avoid getting the penis wet in a bath. You probably won't be dunking your baby yet anyway because the umbilical cord is not likely to have fallen off at this point until healing is complete. Clearly, it will get wet when he pees, and that's not a problem as long as you change diapers as needed. Swollen scrotum.
Our son's scrotum seems disproportionately huge. Should we be concerned?
Probably not. Testicles, as you probably know, come encased in a protective pouch called the scrotum, which is filled with a bit of fluid to cushion them. And thanks to exposure to mom's hormones in utero and a little bit of normal genital swelling at birth, a newborn's testicles can look rather large, especially next to his baby-sized penis. In some babies, the swelling doesn't go down within a few days after birth, likely the result of an excessive amount of fluid in the scrotal sac. Called hydrocele, this condition is nothing to worry about. It will resolve during the first year, usually without any treatment. Ask about your little man's parts at the next doctor's visit, just to be sure it isn't an inguinal hernia, which can either resemble a hydrocele or occur along with it. An exam can quickly determine whether the swelling is due to excess fluid or if there is a hernia involved, or both, or whether it's just baby scrotum business as usual. If you notice swelling that seems painful, tenderness, redness, or discoloration, contact the doctor right away. Hypospadias.
We were just told that the outlet in our son's penis is in the middle instead of the end. What will that mean?
Every so often, something goes slightly awry during prenatal development of the urethra and the penis. In your son's case, the urethra, the tube that carries urine, and after puberty, semen, doesn't run all the way to the tip of the penis, but opens elsewhere. This condition is called hypospadias and is found in an estimated 1 to 3 in 1,000 boys born in the United States. First-degree hypospadias, in which the urethral opening is at the end of the penis but not exactly in the right place, is considered a minor defect and requires no treatment. Second-degree hypospadias, in which the opening is along the underside of the shaft of the penis, and third-degree hypospadias, in which the opening is near the scrotum, can be corrected with surgery. Because the foreskin may be used for the reconstruction, circumcision, even ritual circumcision, is not performed on a baby with hypospadias who will require surgery. Occasionally, a girl is born with the urethra opening at the wrong place, sometimes into the vagina. This, too, is usually correctable with surgery. Swaddling.
I've been trying to keep my baby swaddled, like they showed me in the hospital, but she keeps kicking at the blanket and it gets undone. Should I stop trying?
Just because swaddling is standard procedure in the hospital doesn't mean it has to be standard procedure at home, especially if your baby's not a fan. Most newborns do love that cocoon feeling of being all wrapped up in a tight little bundle and will sleep better on their backs when swaddled, especially because they will startle less. Never place a swaddled baby on the tummy to sleep. Swaddling also helps ease colic in many babies. But even with all those potential perks, some babies just don't see it that way. For them, being wrapped up is too restrictive, and they'll fight it every time. A good rule, if swaddling seems to feel good to your newborn, do it. If it doesn't, don't. But before you give up on swaddling your little one altogether, see if using a Velcro swaddler might keep her from kicking it off. Or opt for a zip-up cocoon-like swaddler or a sleep sack. There are also hybrids, swaddlers that have Velcro tabs on top and a sack on the bottom. Or try leaving her arms unwrapped to see if that gives her the freedom of movement and access to her fingers she seems to crave while still providing her with extra stability on her back during sleep. Once babies become more active, they usually start kicking off or squirming out of their swaddles, no matter what kind. That's a sign to call it quits on swaddling, especially during sleep, since a kicked-off blanket poses a suffocation risk. Continued swaddling can also keep a baby from practicing motor skills. So once a baby starts to attempt to roll over, usually around 3 to 4 months, it's time to unwrap your baby burrito.
Outings with baby. Never again will you be able to leave the house empty-handed, at least not when baby's along. And while you won't always need all these items when you head out with your little one, it's a good idea to pack these essentials in your diaper bag when you're out and about. A changing pad. If your diaper bag doesn't have one, pack a waterproof pad. You can use a towel or a cloth diaper in a pinch, but they won't adequately protect carpeting, beds, or furniture when you're changing baby away from a changing table. Diapers. How many? Depends on how long your outing will be. Always take at least one more than you think you'll need. You'll probably need it if you don't. Diaper wipes. A small convenience pack is easier to carry than a full-size container, and especially convenient if you can refill it. Or you can use a small Ziploc plastic sandwich bag to tote a mini supply. Wipes aren't just for bottoms, by the way. Use them to wash your own hands before feeding baby and before and after changes, as well as for wiping spit up and baby food stains from your clothing, furniture, or your baby, or you. Plastic bags. You'll need these for disposing of dirty disposable diapers, particularly when no trash can is available, as well as for carrying wet and soiled baby clothes home. Formula if you're bottle feeding. If you're definitely, or possibly, going to be out past the next feeding with bottle-fed baby, you'll have to bring a meal along. No refrigeration will be necessary if you take along an unopened single-serving bottle of ready-to-use formula, a bottle of water, to which you'll add powdered formula, or a bottle that stores both powder and water separately until you're ready to shake and serve. If, however, you bring along formula you've prepared at home, you'll have to store it in an insulated container along with a small ice pack or ice cubes. Burp cloths. Any veteran parent knows a burp cloth can spare you and others who hold your baby smelly shoulders. A change of baby clothes. Baby's outfit is picture perfect and you're off somewhere special. You arrive, lift your bundle of cuteness from the car seat, and find a pool of loose, mustardy stools has added the outfit's finishing touch. Just one reason why it's wise to carry along an extra or two extra sets of clothing. And while you're thinking about clothing, carry along a sun hat when the sun is shining and a cold weather hat when the weather calls for it. An extra blanket or sweater. Between seasons, when temperatures fluctuate unpredictably, an additional layer will come in handy. A pacifier, if baby uses one. Carry it in a clean plastic bag or use one that comes with a cover. Consider packing a spare, too, as well as passy wipes to clean passies that get dropped. They will. Toys. For a very young baby, bring along something to look at in the car seat or stroller. Mirrors can be magic. For older babies, lightweight toys they can swat at, poke at, and mouth will fill the bill. Sunscreen. If there's no shade available, use a small